So I'm Dave O'Connor. I'm here to stall for time before lunch, but I am also here to talk about how you can manage interrupts on a team that's under a lot of load in terms of interrupts. Since I'm in an auditorium, and it's always been my desire to have people conditionally put their hands up. Hands up if you manage SREs. Okay, that's a few. Okay, bit more inclusive. Hands up if you are directly responsible for coming up with your team's on-call rotation. Okay, a few more people. Leave your hand up if that is a straightforward and easy process. Are you the only on-call person? I hope we could leave this place as a place of learning and not a place of lies. So generally, it's not fun to do that because on-call sort of stabs at the heart of the very animal brain part of people. It impacts on their lives. It, you know, makes them angry and stressed and all that sort of stuff, depending on how your rotation is. And I wanted to talk about some of the stuff we've done at Google in some of our teams and what we're doing there. So who I am, I've been a Google SRE since 2004, back in the mists of time, when I had to explain what an SRE was to pretty much everybody. Long list of stuff which you may recognize or be sad that is, be sad about. Most recently, I'm managing the teams that do Bigtable, Colossus, Spanner, Logs, MySQL, all the storage stuff at Google in Dublin. So in the last couple of years, I've made it my hobby, or some malevolent force has made it my hobby, to come into teams that are drowning in interrupts, pretty much. Feel like they can't get enough project work done because of the interrupt load, and feel like there's not an awful lot that they can do about that. So a couple of years ago, I came up with a paper. The paper will be published in some form later this year. But I wanted to talk both about the content of the paper and also some stories based off of, you know, what I was angry about when the paper was written. So interrupts. So what are interrupts? Essentially, interrupts are anything that isn't projects, a thing that happens, which means that you have to do a thing. They are more tactical immediate fixes. They're usually not a very creative thing. Ideally, if you're on call for a service, every single page that comes in is like, oh, this is interesting. Let's go look at this thing. But in many cases, when you get paged, it's like, oh, it's that thing. It's that thing that happens all of the time. And, you know, we've fixed the bug in code and haven't rolled it out yet, or some other thing has happened, or some deficiency in a dependency just does that thing and we hate it. So usually not as fun to do as project work. So in theory, and this may vary based on where you are, at Google, pages go to the primary person, so the primary on-call, and tickets and interrupts and user requests and all that sort of stuff go to the secondary on-call. And actually, there's variance inside of Google as to who does what under a couple of different models that I'll talk about. So in practice, pages usually go to the primary. I haven't spotted a rotation where they just page everybody or something like that. But tickets and interrupts tend to go to this weird amalgam. I use the cloud. I know it's not a popular shape at this particular conference, but they go into this sort of weird cloud, right? The cloud is you know, sort of determines whether it goes to the secondary, who it should go to, or to someone else on the team. Now, this could depend on what the interrupt is, where the originator is, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, often there's people who understand a part of the system where, you know, rather than opening a ticket, people will say, that guy knows that part of the system, I will ask him. And the person might respond by, you know, answering every time, which is not great. So when the model breaks down is when there are too many interrupts for the primary and secondary, where the amount of time the primary has in the day, which is 24 hours, is not enough hours to deal with everything that's broken. where interrupts are specialized to a person, where, you know, only this person understands that esoteric part of the system. So if a page comes in, you better hope they're in the office and not on vacation and not, you know, somewhere else or that sort of thing. We can kind of muddle on, but not really. And intentionally, which we spotted in a couple of places where tickets come in, and I've seen teams where a ticket comes in and it gets round robin assigned to a random member of the team who can then get a ticket at any time of day or night. Well, any time of business hours, and you can get a ticket at any time. And that's stupid, and I will elaborate on the stupidness. Just in war story terms, and you may recognize some of these anti-patterns in interrupts, there is the gauntlet. So for those not familiar with the term, the gauntlet was an old form of punishment where you would line up a whole bunch of guys and the person being punished would, you know, walk past them and each person would get a go, right? So the gauntlet, when it applies to interrupts, is I'm on call for a week, or I'm on interrupts for a week. That was a pain in the ass, but it's Friday now and I can forget about being on call for another month or so. So the problem with that is nothing ever gets fixed. You know, on call is just a pain in the ass, but it's only a pain in the ass every 5 or 6 weeks, which means nobody really actually fixes things. They just sort of run through the on-call shifts and come out the other end. The busy worker, this is something we spotted where people will do tickets because they enjoy things they remember. You know, a person who sort of comes in and goes, I feel I can be successful by doing interrupts and doing tickets all day. And this could be a failure in management where the manager might say, well, there are a lot of tickets. That doesn't really work long term for people's careers or for people's general well-being. An amazing disappearing category, going back to I've occasionally come into teams and spotted, like, what's that bug category? Oh, yeah, like, George handles that, right? And that's a set of interrupts that only one person or a small set of people can or choose to look at. The resolutions to that can be, we should put that into the general bug queue, but the resolution can also be, These aren't important, and George is crazy, so let's just turn them off. Things we must discuss. These are sort of general principles that we came up with out of looking at how people do interrupts and looking at all this sort of stuff. Context switches are hard. And by hard, I mean they're hard on people's brains. They take a long time. Generally, people like to think that they can context switch fairly quickly, that they can sort of, like, you know, switch back and forth. Like, I'm working on my project, I get paged, I go look at the page for 20 minutes, I go back, I can fill in my timesheet which said 20 minutes on a page, and I only spent 20 minutes on a page today. However, numerous studies have determined that context switches cost about an hour, you know, possibly more in terms of useful work, because you don't go look at the page for 20 minutes and then go straight back into your project. And we introduced the concept of cognitive flow state. So cognitive flow state is a $10 word for the zone. So if people are have worked on software at any point or worked on a thing they're interested in at any point, the zone, it's where you sort of sit down and you go, okay, I've gotten into this, I'm really in it, you know, nobody should interrupt me because getting back into the zone is a thing, right? And that's an actual thing, right? That's an actual state of operation that people can get into, which means that even if somebody walks up to you and says, hello, I'm going to ask you a thing, and you tell them the thing, and then you sort of turn around and go, because it takes a while to get back into it. The consensus is it's at least an hour. So if you get two or three interrupts over the course of the day, either because your manager has decided to round robin interrupts or anything like that, you've essentially wasted half the day to interrupts and getting back into the zone. Another interesting thing, if you study the diagram, is that the skill and difficulty level, either end of this graph works. So on one side of this graph, you have, you know, I'm working on my project. It's really interesting. I'm really into it. I've gotten into the state where I'm very productive on it. I'm looking at it, all this sort of stuff. And the other side is I am playing Tetris. Right. So it's just as valid. You can get just as lost in it. You can just do it. I found numerous people doing tickets in this way. You know, you do user tickets. I'm doing the thing. I'm going to get that number down to zero on the dashboard, and then everything is going to be great, except it isn't, because they keep coming in. So cognitive flow state is hard. On-call is a project. Now, this is potentially where things start getting controversial. On-call is a project. On-call is a thing that needs to evolve over time. Your system state in terms of how operationally it's working can go from really good to really bad to really good to really bad. And a lot of it depends on not how hard your on-call is working, but your on-call person is working, but how much time and energy and thought you've put into on-call as a project. So if you sit down at the start of the quarter and say, we're doing our objectives, how are we going to make on-call less stupid and sucky for people? You know, that's a project. Carve out time for it. I would say most teams do not do this. Most teams sit down and say, oh, this is what we're going to do, and that's what we're going to do, and that's what we're going to do. It's like, but, you know, what about this thing that's been breaking forever? No, we're not going to do anything about that, right? So, and the critical thing with on-call is it is a priority, right? You can put down like, oh, yes, the on-call project and P3, right? We'll get to that at some point. On-call doesn't care if you consider it a priority. It just is. Some days it will take up your entire day. Some days it won't. Fairness is easy to program if you assume people are machines. So this goes back to the on-call rotation generation thing, is that if you assume everybody, you know, is a perfectly spherical engineer in Euclidean space, and you can sort of say, well, people have weekends, but we can schedule over those, and people do this, and, you know, we can kind of program that. Similarly, for round-robining interrupts to people, you can sort of say, well, if everybody does an hour of interrupts a day, then it's better than, you know, one person doing 8 hours of interrupts a day, or rather, it's the exact same, which we know to be bullshit, because people are not machines. People do not have instant context switch capabilities, and they're not about to start getting that. So fairness is easy to program. And the fundamentals. Humans are bad machinery. Their UIs are terrible. You know, you go and talk to a person, and they might say a thing to you, and it's not what they're thinking at all, right? They get grumpy. They, you know, don't show up sometimes. You can't really rely on them in the same way as you can for machines. So relying on them being machines when you go to assign them work and assign them on call is not a great approach. Cognitive flow is precious. I would say most teams attribute no value to cognitive flow. They sort of say, you're an operational engineer, you're supposed to be darting around and fixing everything and never really concentrating on one thing. And the critical part and of the methodologies that we use, this is one of the main things. Time should be polarized. And by that, I mean, you come in on Monday. So the average person, when they come in on Monday, you know, kind of knows what they're going to do that day. But I would imagine most SREs don't. They come in on Monday and they say, oh, I've got to work on that thing, unless something else happens, right? And that's really bad for people. That's really bad for especially creative people, as SREs are, right? You have somebody who writes code all day and has nothing to do with operations can come in on Monday and say, for this entire week, I'm going to schlep code all day, right? I can put my headphones on and never talk to anybody and do that. Now, they seldom get to actually do that, but for SREs, it applies doubly, right? That you generally don't know what's going to happen that day. And a lot of the time, it's by design that you don't know, which is kind of terrible. Practicals. So I applied this method to a number of teams inside of Google, generally with some sort of rules of thumb as to how we should go about things. I'm going to talk about some of these. Some of these may not apply in your organization for various organizational reasons, but I'm going to talk about these anyway, and you can come shout at me afterwards. I am getting a pre-lunch hangry crowd at this point. Polarized time, which I just covered, do a thing, you know, make it so that the people on your team can come into work and do one thing. Now, that thing can be projects. That thing can also be on call, right? So one of the things that we did for some of these rotations is we said, when you were on call, you're on call for a week, Monday to Friday. When you were on call, you were not expected to, and you were expected to not work on any projects whatsoever. So PMs love this. Well, they hate it, but they also love it because it makes things a lot more predictable in terms of time management and can you rely on progress next week when Joe was working on his thing and is also on call? No. And that's a much better answer than maybe in many people's book. Polarizing time. Come on, clicker. Think about interruptibility. Think about, again, the person who comes in on Monday and wants to be able to work on a thing for an entire day and is it likely that they'll be able to do that? Is it by design that they will not be able to do that? Think back to the team that round robins their tickets as they come in. The person on that team will come in on Monday and say, I will work on a project for an indeterminate amount of time until I am interrupted, which will be today. And that's not a good place to be in your brain. Do for tickets what you do for pages. This is very Google specific. They asked me for the slides a week ago. But in many teams at Google, for pages, we have our weekly handoff meeting, which may exist elsewhere, where we sort of say, what was this page? What was this page? Why are 20% of our pages for this stupid dependency? All that sort of thing. And what that generally means is that if you triage your pages regularly, stuff gets done about, you know, the ones that are particularly egregious. There are very few teams that I've experienced that do that for tickets and bugs and all that sort of thing. Lots of dev teams I've seen do it for bugs, but looking at your tickets that are coming in, you know, and saying 20% of the user-generated tickets for last week were this stupid thing. This has been the case for 3 or 4 months. Shouldn't we automate this away? Right, and that informs what project work you can end up working on. There are lots of nice little projects that can essentially make on-call tickets, interrupts, way less of a pain in the ass than it currently is. Respect yourselves, and this was a big deal. A lot of the teams that I come into, there is a mentality of we are an operationally focused team and there is a particular personality type that looks at that and says, I should be a hero, you know, I should do this, I should do that. There's also a mentality of we should make it as easy as possible for the customers to do a particular thing, such that the customers can produce like a not very well-formed request and we will infer somehow what they want. An example would be if a customer wants a particular thing to be done, which involves, you know, flipping a few switches and, you know, dialing some levers and producing a change list or producing, a change or something like that, get the customer to do it, right? So it's the customer that wants the thing from you. So a customer being able to generate an hour of work for you when it's them that wants the thing, you know, why are you doing that? And a lot of the time when customers show up, they want, you know, your expertise or your production credentials. Right. So if all they want is your production credentials, then just set stuff up so that all you really need to do is approve a change and then they can submit it and then you're done. Right. So other stuff. This is the miscellaneous slide. They asked me for the slides a week ago. Email alerts are from the past, and I know I get a question about this every single time. Email alerts are some Stone Age bullshit. Right. I come into a lot of teams that, you know, email alerts come out, and I use email alerts here, like the transport isn't important. I use email alerts here as a sort of catch-all term for a bunch of, you know, sort of informative messages that come in where an anal retentive person could look at them all day. And they may indicate a problem in the future. And you could absolutely make the argument that, oh, we probably have caught stuff in the past based off of staring at these emails or staring at these tickets or staring at this general trend. So one of the most effective things we did in a lot of these teams was call people on their bullshit and basically submit a change to turn off all of our informative email alerts or redirect them to the one person on the team that wanted them. Which, because it's all, there's always one guy, right? Out of a team of 12 or 13, he's like, I completely spotted like a thing a couple of months ago and I fixed it, but nobody noticed. And I'm like, okay, great, we'll send you those then. Consensus is nice. Related to the previous item, consensus is nice. It's not necessary. And this applies generally to managers and TLs and et cetera. That one person on a team of, you know, 16 people who might be looking after a service, and there's that one person that stamps their foot and says, I like email alerts, or I like the past, or I like lack of progress, or I like change aversion. Ignore that person. You can do that. That's why you're a manager. So absolute consensus. This applies to coming up with on-call rotations and policies and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Any change to on-call rotations and on-call policies and what you're supposed to do when on-call and all that sort of stuff, it's like a long-running domestic dispute. Nobody likes talking about it. And you just sort of continue about your business and don't really, you know, somebody brings it up, but everyone is like, no, don't talk about that. But if you discover that consensus is nice, that sometimes if 14 or 15 out of the 16 people on the team want to change something about on-call, you can just change it. Policy is as powerful a tool as code. Now, this applies to what we said previously about making the customer do some of the work. Thinking about like how you could automate away a small task, or you could just have it so that that task doesn't happen anymore. An example was I run a bunch of the backups for Google, where you know people can go and configure their backups, and you know we had to do change lists, we had to review them, and one day we went in and said, what happens if somebody submits something that you know is completely broken in terms of configuration? Oh, their backups don't work. All right, so why are we reviewing them? Right, they're going to notice if their backups don't work and go, oh, and review it. So we just stopped doing reviews of those changes, and people can break their backups if they want. Right, now we could have, you know, written pre-submit tests and written, you know, code to automatically spit out people's configurations and made it so they couldn't check stuff in with check-in triggers and all that sort of stuff. But we didn't. We just said, our policy is you can break up your backups if you like. You'll probably notice, but it doesn't actually matter. It cost us about 5 minutes to send a snarky email to everybody and say, we don't care anymore, bye. And you know, we could have spent a month working on code to do that. Another big thing, the A stands for agreement. This is the A in SLA. And Niall talked about error budgets earlier on, but I find a lot of teams where they're, you know, they must, you know, you must answer a page within 5 minutes, that the availability target for the service is 4 nines, that all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, who did you agree that with? Did you agree that with yourself, like the devs, the business, all that sort of stuff? And oftentimes it's like, no, nobody. I'm like, all right, how long is it, you know, if you don't respond to the page for half an hour, say, does it make any difference? No. You know, if this pipeline is down, how long does this pipeline need to be down before the business is affected? 72 hours. Okay. Could you not page yourself for that? Oh, we have, it's broken, you know. So the A stands for agreement. If you have a dev team or a product team that you're working with that wants you to keep the thing running, ask them, you know, how good it needs to be, right? And in SRE, we talk about the concept of error budgets, right, where we can just do mad stuff if we stay within our SLA. And Ben Trainer likes saying, what's the point in having all these nines if you can't take them out for a spin every once in a while, right? Is that if your service is good enough as defined by the business, then you really don't need to kill yourself over the details. Okay, so how can you apply it? Minimize time the individual can be interrupted. And if I could do underlines and, you know, big boxes and stuff around that, minimize the amount of time a person can be interrupted. The end state of introducing some of these changes is a person can come to work and do their project all day or be on call all day and then go home, and that's predictable for them. That they can say, next week I will do a project or I will do on call. Not both, and not neither, obviously. Do for interrupts what you do for on call. People agonize over on call and how it works and all that sort of stuff. Think about interrupts. They don't go away by themselves. They will keep coming in. You know, user-driven ones, machine-driven ones, they'll just keep coming in and more will keep coming in unless you institute projects to get stuff done. Respect the customer and respect yourself. I snuck in the respect the customer thing. But have it so that the customer is getting what they need. They might need to do some stuff for themselves, shock horror. But also think about yourself. Think about yourself, your team, how healthy they are brain-wise, how likely they are to burn out if you don't let them do anything for more than an hour at a time indefinitely, which is many operational teams. And yeah, that. I have no more slides. Fuck. Okay, that's it. Questions? Who has the thing? You're gonna ask me about email alerts.
You hear me? Okay. Yeah, so I'm SRM for Gmail in Zurich, and we are having now a discussion on actually not the interrupts, but these kinds of medium-term issues that constantly arise. And medium-term means that it's not just short. It can mean that it's 3 days. It can mean it's 2 weeks of work. And we were wondering and discussing how we would fairly actually distribute these to people.
A lot of teams, and I happen to know the Gmail team is fairly well organized about this sort of thing because I built it. Considering it a meta project and just saying, like, this is a project. Who wants to do this particular thing? I have many thoughts about, like, what motivates particular people, and one of the things that motivates a certain class of people is unstupiding things, right? And a lot of the time you're not sort of saying, who wants to do this shitty project? You're sort of saying, this thing is stupid. Look, we have identified it as stupid because we're looking instead of not looking, right? And in a lot of cases, with interrupts and on-call, you're not looking, right? It's the identification of the thing that is endemic in the system is most of the work, right? You know, if you can come up with a nice, neat little project like this will take 2 weeks, and it will remove 5% of our user-driven interrupts, you've already done most of the work. There's going to be somebody that's going to go, ooh, me, me, me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, more questions?
Adrian.
Hello. So you said do for tickets what you do for on-call. Would you include a kind of ticket handoff analog of the on-call handoff in that?
Yeah, many of the teams do that. Where you can do sort of automated analytics of, like, so tickets can be fairly easily sorted into queues based off of simple heuristics. And I've probably insulted many data scientists by saying that, but, you know, breaking it down. And so we essentially, automated on-call handoffs are a thing you can do. Automated ticket handoffs are just a tiny step up from that, where you just go, here are all the tickets. 20% of them was one guy. You know, like another 10-15% was this thing that kvetches about running out of capacity in 3 months' time. And you know, these other ones are... Oh, and another thing is tickets for transient events. That's a huge thing, right? Where you go look at the ticket and you say, oh, it's not happening anymore. And that's like 20% of your tickets. You know, find some other way. But the ticket and interrupt handoff, yeah, we do that as well.
Okay, we have time for one or two more questions. Back.
So you're looking at this as an easy mode conference. Hard mode is there's no Android thing. It's just like a brick.
You mentioned there on-call handoffs and automated on-call handoffs. Did you ever see a problem where if something kind of breaks 15 minutes before the end of my on-call, that they just wait and then let somebody else deal with the problem? And if you do, how do you combat that?
I don't actually, because and this is the thing where the sort of hour either side of an on-call handoff is a sort of a mire, right? Because if something really bad breaks 15 minutes before the end of your shift, a lot of the on-call shifts are like follow the sun, right? So it's 8 p.m. in New York and the guy wants to go home. So you do an active or hot handoff, right, where you're basically saying, this thing just broke. I'm not going to spend the next 2 hours looking at it because I won't be on call anymore. And you have to do both the sort of boilerplate, here's what happened, here are the bugs, here are the upcoming changes, and also, here is the thing. And usually people will actually get somebody on IRC or on the phone or something like that and say, I'm doing a hot handoff. This is actually happening right now. So I don't combat it.